write down, that has to be changed. Even in hospital, when I've been in hospital, instead of being treated for my injuries, my police injuries, or addressing my disability, as I always say from the beginning, I'm protected by the ADA, can I have a little bit more time?
No, I want you to wrap up. I'm almost done.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Instead of addressing my disability, they tested me for drugs, they gave me Psych-Eval, and they tortured me by not allowing me to use the phone, etc. So that was the EMS. And then with the dogs, it reminds me of Albuquerque, but here in Portland, we're known for our horses and how they crush people. I just don't think that that's even discussion, to use a dog as a threat to bite someone. And then technology, quoting the police panel, we need to ask if we're going to make the situation worse by our actions, and that's why we have technology. Well, technology, it's a techno fix. It just makes it even more complicated and worse, and it's our technology is becoming more of a police state, basically. So finally, let's see. Sunshine Division, by the way, it's all genetically modified food. I wouldn't eat it. there's one last thing. Right, so I just wanted to point out that Mayor Potter was a police chief, and even though he had a leg up on you, I think it would behoove you to apologize like he used to the community. I think that would be really, really helpful, and that's a good start instead of the navel-gazing.
Thanks, Crystal. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Melissa Sason, and I'm coming to speak before you all and for the public on concerns on a human issue. I believe that there are good police officers. I believe there are good councilmen, good mayors, good government officials. But doing the right thing is in question in all of these instances. I believe that we are becoming pawns to a bigger game. The game is to put man against man, like the art of war, divide and conquer, where everybody is divided and they don't see the good in the police that are protecting the citizens, where there are corruptness and people hiding the facts and doing the things that they are taught to do, the right thing to do. I believe that they were to be peace officers, not to be called on a routine call to come and check on an investigation on a person that was threatening to commit suicide on a concerned relative or girlfriend, and to come in and just, here, let me do you a favor and shoot, kill you for yourself. Let me do it for you. That is not right, and that is violating the rights of the people. I believe that the people are actually being attacked. The people, the humans are being attacked because their rights are being violated. The police officers' rights are being violated, like in Ferguson case. They were not given the proper information to the public to avoid the conflict that was caused and the contention that was caused and the negative attention that was brought upon by the people to destroy their own city that they live in. They live in that city, and they are not even seeing the issues at hand. And that is not their fault because they know not what they do. And it's a bigger concern on a national level that about the GMO and all the poisons and toxins in the food and the immunizations that are causing these chemical deficiencies in people to raise these problems and bring forth these problems and these issues because they're not being taken care of properly. So my concern is that we need to hold the police accountable that are responsible for this issue, train the police that are responsible and that will be responsible to withhold the peace for the citizens and to train them properly and for everybody to know what the policies are and not have some middleman like, oh, it's this person's fault or this person's fault. There should be one way to do it. If I killed someone, I would be questioned and charged. But a police officer is not being held that way. So I believe that's wrong. It's a human issue. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Mayor, I have one question for you. I have to ask. I was with a group of people Saturday night, and we were on the sidewalk. I was right next to K2. I was right next to Dennis Thoreau. The police ordered everybody arrest. They ordered everybody on the sidewalk to move to the middle of the street that we were under arrest. Did you give that order?
No.
So it was your police department.
Chief Reese was present.
So it was your police department that made a choice that you are going to have to pay for.
My point is later. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next Severson said he was going to do his investigation, but Detective Severson.
The next three are Michelle Munt.
He already made
I believe the first name is Abel or Ann Elid, and Barry Joe Stull.
Okay, come on up. Good afternoon. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Michelle Munt, and I think the police that I witness is very injurious to people. In the last year, I've seen several incidents of the tissue is the issue. For Amanda, the nursing point of view, the tissue is the issue. They're hurting people's bodies, and I see it with my own eyes every month or so. And I just don't want to go into it now. Everyone's saying it really well, but it's social control that the whole militarization is doing in our whole country. And it is the police against the people. And that's I'm just going to say it that way. It's pretty obvious. The police are against the people. We are being put against each other, and I'm glad we're noticing. I'm going to tone myself down against the police because I don't want to play into the game of me being fighting against my own citizen against the police. So it's I don't want to be us to be made enemies, all of us citizens against each other. So the social control is working really well. The horses came after us on Tuesday night, charging us under the on Water Avenue, right less than a mile from here. And then again on Saturday, and I saw the police shoving and giving women whiplash just on Tuesday night. So I think we have social control by the police, and I'm not in favor of it, but neither am I in favor of me taking them as an enemy. I think we're being played to fight amongst each other, to sell weapons, et cetera.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Amy Elia, and I'm speaking on behalf of the homeless in this case. First, I do believe that the 48-hour rule should be abolished simply because the police are dealing with our civil rights. And police rights should not trump civil rights in any case. Beyond this, the homeless of Portland, Oregon, do not feel that they have any representation in review of police process against them. As you're well aware, the homeless community is multiracial, multicolored, sometimes physically, financially, or psychologically disadvantaged. And police activity viewed by the homeless is not considered benign. And we are asking for some input through a police review board to be able to address the issues between the homeless and the police insofar as the city is concerned. I would also like to remind you, Mr. Mayor, that the police do not have a right to evict the homeless from the street of Portland. This city belongs to us as much as it belongs to you. And police violence against the homeless, whether for any reason, is just as bad as police violence against any other citizen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mr. Stull.
Barry Joe Stull. I'm going to kind of jump in the middle here with the cover letter for the 2012 OIR report here. And it's, at my request, this is the city auditor, at my request, the 2004 Perez case was also included in the current review because it was the oldest of the incidents eligible for expert review, and because that incident generated intense community concern and contributed to the police bureau establishing the use of force review board. Mr. Perez was an unarmed black motorist that was shot dead in St. John's here in the city in March of 2004. The officer who shot him, Jason Seri, had an encounter with me. It started with now Sergeant Cliff Bonchikalupi. who I know you're all familiar with, knocking on my door, and Officer Sari putting in his police report that I said I'd beat him in court. I was protected under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, and the damning language in that police report was that the issue of Stephen Dons came up, and it sounded like I had inside information. Stephen Dons died in custody of the Multnomah County Detention Center jail after a shootout with the Portland police in 1998, and we have Colleen Weibel on the police memorial wall that establishes the date that that happened. I had a trial scheduled for April 20th, 2004, and I got a call from Deputy DA Sewell down here at the courthouse, and he said that he did me a favor and didn't have a warrant issued for my arrest for missing court. And I said, what are you talking about? We're scheduled for a call on April 19th and trial on April 20th. And he says, oh, there must be some kind of a court mix-up. I just happened to be in the courtroom, he said, when Judge Grenard called our case. We're going to have to reschedule. Well, on April 20th, instead of my trial, we had the coroner's inquest into the fatal shooting of James Jihar Perez. I did have a trial in June, and Dr. Grimm was not allowed to testify to the jury using a case called State versus OMB. I got a felony conviction, and I appealed, and the Court of Appeal found in 2005 that the OMB rationale had been made obsolete by the very same Oregon Medical Marijuana Act that I was protected by. My appeal was interfered with, however, by my nonprofit affordable housing landlord filing a 30-day no-cause eviction, and then as I appealed the eviction, destroying over $20,000 worth of my property on two distinct episodes, one in March 2006 and again in October 2006. Mayor, you're partnering as the Portland Development Commission and the Portland Housing Bureau with that nonprofit affordable housing landlord, and they've been keeping that fiveplex that I've been evicted from vacant for 3 years, which means there's over $100,000 worth of affordable housing rent that hasn't been offered. And I believe that the reason that Housing Commissioner Dan Saltzman is partnershipping with this corrupt criminal PCRI is that that's the kickback for them trying to destroy me to cover up, one, that Officer Sari wasn't always right, and two, that Colleen Weibel was in fact shot by the trigger-happy police officers on the marijuana task force.
You need to wrap up.
So I was arrested starting in July 14th, 2012, twice on the 17th and twice on the 19th, and the second time on the 19th, the ambulance was dispatched, and Sergeant Holbrook came and said, we got your ride here, Mr. Stahl, and I was taken to the jail. Now, one thing I have in common with James Chassie Jr. is both of us had refused medical attention, refused medical treatment, entered into the record on our behalf by the City of Portland employees. I actually had summoned that ambulance.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
You got to stop this corruption.
Thank you.
I would love to have a meeting with you about my check for $4,775. I did send you a letter. You have that. It's from October 15th.
Thanks very much.
I would like to meet with you, and I would like Commissioner Saltzman to address the fact that we have affordable housing that's vacant right now.
Sir, you have used your time. I will look your letter. Thank you.
I certainly have used my time.
Thank you.
And I've got a case in federal court right now, and I would love to have a settlement. And that would be that you're going to stop the criminality that's been laid and meted out on me. And all those arrests from July are going to be reversed on appeal because the Portland Police Bureau refused to accept my defense witness subpoenas.
Okay, thank you.
This is serious.
Good luck. Take care.
Thank you so much for your time.
The next three are Gregory Benton, David Davis, and Charles Johnson.
Okay, I think you're first. Go ahead, please.
First, okay. My name is Gregory Benton.
Just push the button on that microphone in front of you so we can hear you. There you go.
My name is Gregory Benton. I was asked by Teresa Rayford, who I like to refer the rest of my time. I'll be extremely brief. Regarding the 40 hours before they do an investigation, you can easily resolve that in your negotiation with the police union, but you may want to include testing the bloods of police officers after each incident. It's something you should do on a regular basis. I don't know if you even test the police blood. In the past, you hadn't. One of the things that we're really talking about is that people with their hands up, Ferguson, situation that happened in the past with African-American youth being killed, I want to refresh your memory. And the young man who was choked in New York to death by police officers. Now, you think Ferguson's far away and New York's far away. In the 70s, we had a decorated Marine, a Vietnam veteran who was choked to death by police officers. And the next day, the police officers had a choke and go smoke them T-shirt that they appeal to. They provide a culture. You know that Mr. Brown had his hands up in the don't shoot incident. Mr. Aaron Campbell also had his hands up in the don't shoot incident. In each one of these incidents, the police officers had, the city had an opportunity to remove the police officers responsible for these acts from duty. They didn't do it. I sued the city of Portland twice. I'm in a situation of suing them again. The first time I sued them had to do with the violation of the Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. We did settle it. One of the officers who was attending that in that incident was Officer Freshour. One of the things he said during his depositions was, you people don't know your rights. We know your rights. We do what we want to do. As long as they think that you will allow them to do what they want to do, as long as you protect them like you did Freshour, you spend, I don't know how much money you spend defending him, and then you turn around and try to fire him. So I have 1 minute left. I'm going to let that to Teresa Rayford. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Davis, go ahead. Why don't we wait till the end, let others testify first who haven't gotten a chance to speak yet. Teresa?
Hands up!
Don't shoot!
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 My hands are up!
Don't shoot!
My hands are up!
Don't shoot!
My hands are up!
Okay, Mr. Davis, go ahead. All right. Mr. Johnson, go ahead.
You ready for me? Yeah, okay. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and there's so many areas we can go with this 100-some-odd pages, but I think we'll just ad-lib it and talk about one issue that came up, which is definitely related to officer-involved shootings, regardless of whether it's covered in the scope of this report. And that question is, where do the bullets go, and why do we keep letting them get fired? That, I think, the problem with this report structure and the previous year's report structure is it's a little choppy and isolated, and we don't get a... What we really need is not a report where a consultant tells us how we can better build police justification for killing our fellow citizens. What we need to do is a harm reduction study so that the police kill less of our citizens, and in some legitimate cases, less of our citizens put themselves in situations where they're at risk from our police. Those situations should never be peaceful protests about the flaws of the grand jury system. But in 48 hours, people will be back over on, I believe it's 6th Avenue, just off of MLK by the McDonald's. And we'll be standing by scarred walls with Portland police bullets took a chunk out in the death of Keaton Otis. And the way this report was presented in the Rose Room and today, I really don't know if my fellow citizens should be satisfied that they're getting their money's worth towards the real goals of harm reduction. As Ms. Fritz pointed out, we somehow believe that we can have people sworn to uphold the law, serve and protect us, and yet they're too clueless to administer CPR to dying people. That does not build confidence in the police. We should, as citizens, demand both action, and that action should be based on a comprehensive report that puts all the questionable police conduct together, not just for the benefits of the Kafouris, for them to make us as citizens, because when the Kafouris win a lawsuit against you, what's really happening is all of us are paying, the citizens are paying to the victim because we did not work with you to have safe and accountable policing. And so I hope that you won't accept this report, that it doesn't do what the city should have done with its money. It doesn't really get us past the issue of legal technicalities and hemming and hawing, and just get to the point of we want a police department that, regardless of whether or not they can have 48 hours of silence, does less harm, is less likely to throw flashbangs around Pioneer Square and Macy's, and is less likely to corner citizens a block away from the police department and go through some dramatic shenanigans about get on the sidewalk, get off the sidewalk, and then take people into custody for no point. There's a general lack of confidence in the policing, and this report does not address it. So I look forward to you working to do better. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Davis, you're on. Just put your name in the record, Mr. Davis.
My name is David Keith Davis, K-I-F Davis. One thing I wanted to say was there's the TV show, The First 48 Hours, and it talks about how murders are not solved and that the decrease of solving them goes down within the first 48 hours. So basically, by having a 48-hour rule with the police, you're making it less likely that the real evidence will come out and that there's less likelihood of there being a clear train of thought when the police officers are involved in a shooting. And you guys brought up the issue about them possibly being traumatized. Well, you know, 48 hours to, you know, ponder something over is just going to make the testimony less reliable and the facts less reliable. I think the 48 hours is more for officers to get their story straight than for actually public safety issues. And also, you know, I spoke here last week about the I Am Darren Wilson police, and also Hart Noecker, who is a journalist for Rebel Metropolis, he wrote an article about those cops. I was one of the 10 people arrested at the protest, as was Hart Noecker. His officer who signed the paperwork for him being arrested was one of the officers, and that officer was actually at the East Precinct where all of us were at. And I'm a member of the press. I clearly identified myself as a member of the media. I told them I'm a producer for the Opperman Report. And I'm also a member of Multnomah County Cop Watch and also a member of Film the Police Portland. One of the other people that was arrested was Robert West. He is also someone that works with Film the Police Portland. So I think that basically we were targeted because we did not do anything unlawful. All we did was document the event, including Hart Noecker, including Robert West, and including me. So you have three members of the alternative media that were arrested, and that's a war on journalism, and that's a violation of our First Amendment rights. And also, you know, it is against the law to federally conspire. It's against federal law to conspire against people and their First Amendment. And it's punishable by up to 10 years in prison.
Thanks very much.
And the fact that alternative media was targeted, and also, you know, they said that Dennis, the news editor of the Mercury, was detained. Well, the reality of the situation was he was under arrest, too. He might have been arrested at one point, and then it moved down to detained, but everyone was technically put under arrest. When we had all four blocks,
we need to let other
all four
speak,
blocks taken over by the police and kettled in to the middle of the street, and the police clearly announcing we were under arrest, that means that we were all under arrest.
Okay, thanks so much. We need to let other people speak now. We need to let other people speak. Okay, got that point. Thank you. No. Please let people speak. I'm sorry to hear that.
He went to prison or to jail for 2 weeks over that, Demetrius Cooper.
Sorry to hear it. Now we need to let other people speak. Thanks.
The last two people who signed up are Chris Lowe and Trudy, I believe is the first name, Cooper.
Okay, come on up. Okay, Mr. Lowe, you're on first.
Okay. My name is Chris Lowe. I spoke to you recently representing Portland Jobs with Justice, but today I'm just speaking on my own personal behalf. I want to address the OIR report in only sort of indirectly. I think that we are in a crisis in this country. It's a national crisis in which Portland participates, and it's reflected in the protests that emerged in Ferguson, Missouri, but it's generated responses all around the country because of what is defined as normal policing in this country. And basically, what we are hearing from every community in the country is that normal policing should not be normal, that there is something profoundly wrong with the way policing is done in our culture and our society. And the OIR report is a normal policing report. And within those frameworks, it has some interesting things to say, and I'm sure you'll follow up on them. But I think that the city of Portland's response to the more generalized crisis of our culture around policing has been totally inadequate. And so what I want to address is what would be an adequate response, okay? In some of what I'm saying, there are calls to action, and I think that if you were to follow up on what I'm suggesting, I would ask you to pay attention to the Albania Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform and to Portland Cop Watch, because they have been working on these things for a long time in the kind of detail that we need. But so what do we need? I think we need the city to acknowledge that it has a history of denial, evasion, and deflection about racially discriminatory policing and issues of police accountability. We need the city to acknowledge the need for deep changes in policy and culture regarding racially discriminatory policing and to begin a process of making change in collaboration with community advocates. We need the city to acknowledge the need for deep changes in policies and structures of police accountability to uproot a culture of impunity that affects the city from the street-level cops up to the city council level. And that means a process to create a new independent powers and institutions involving the community for accountability. It means drop the appeal of Judge Simon's role in the DOJ settlement. You went ahead with that under deadline pressure. You're not under that deadline pressure anymore. Reconsider. Drop the appeal. It means publicly commit to renegotiate the arbitration clauses of the city contract with the police union. I'm much less concerned about the 48-hour rule. It seems to be nugatory at this point from what I heard in the testimony. But I think that the arbitration clauses are a serious problem because there's a repeated pattern, even within the normal policing of Portland, of the chief and other officials, you know, doing discipline that then the arbitration procedure overturns. And I think you need to take a different negotiating posture and make that a primary negotiating goal in your next contract. And then publicly commit to abandoning the current practice of reducing disciplinary recommendations to make them align with previous discipline, which Chief Reach again has repeatedly done. What that does is it institutionalizes historically weak discipline when what we need is to institutionalize higher standards of discipline. Finally, I think we have to acknowledge, the city has to acknowledge that the nominal commitment to community policing has been eviscerated by more than 15 years of militarized policing instituted under Chief Croker in new ways in his period, but become normalized. And we have to demilitarize, we have to acknowledge that problem and demilitarize. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Cooper.
Hi, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Trudy Cooper, and I'm a citizen of the Elliott neighborhood, and I'm sorry about my throat. I'll do the best I can here. I think there's a lot of good substance in this report, particularly their recommendation regarding the 48 hours and also the improvements that they think are needed in order to ensure that recommendations end up being implemented. I was in the meeting yesterday that people have mentioned in the Rose Room, and I am still nonetheless recommending a delay in your approval of this because I think that you need some additional time to give the authors a chance to incorporate some of the input that they got yesterday at the very least. But I would recommend that you also include in this process somehow more community involvement. For one thing, one of the things that came up was the issue of, as people have mentioned, of profiling and it not figuring in much in either this report or in previous reports. And the authors did emphasize that what happens before the trigger is pulled is very important. While profiling is one of those things that happens before the trigger is pulled, we know that profiling exists. We know that it can be deadly. Keaton Otis, for example, was stopped because he didn't look right to, he looked wrong to the officers. They thought he looked wrong. They thought he was dressed wrong. They thought his car didn't look like it fit him. And in the report, they described the statements that they made regarding that, that the officers made regarding that as race neutral. They sound very race heavy to me. And I think that, you know, that day when I pulled into the Walgreens parking lot 2.5 years ago, it's been now, and it was right after he had been shot, and I saw all the cars there, and they were putting up the tape, and we were locked down in Walgreens because the investigators hadn't arrived yet. And it really sinks in at a gut level when a young life is lost and you find out later that it was avoidable because profiling is avoidable. And I don't see the centrality of profiling in the efforts that I see, you know, around this report or in general with the reforms that we're trying to do. The consultants yesterday said that this it's very important for that the report was for us, that it's very important for us to be able to guide and pressure and emphasize what priorities we have. Profiling is one of those. The 48 hours is obviously another one. You do have an ongoing contract with these consultants. I'm wondering if you could help us understand at some point if some additional community outreach could be included in that. There's models in the city that work very well. Recently, the Housing Bureau, I'll wrap up quickly. Recently, the Housing Bureau has done outreach that has been very participatory and involved. If they can do it, it seems to me that Police Bureau can do it. I hope that you will include more of that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, both of you. I think I gave Ms. Rayford an opportunity to come back up if you'd like. So come on back up.
All right, Charlie. As a fourth-generation Oregonian, I'm embarrassed to be a Portlander because of the laws that we have in our state and because of the report that I read, and to acknowledge with those attorneys that are civil rights attorneys that said that this report was for us, the people. They said, we're making this for you. We're glad that you have it. We're glad that you're asking these questions because it would be a safer community if you guys accepted those recommendations. We would have a safer community if the accountability wasn't only up to the Portland Police Department to make those assumptions and those outcomes. We would have a safer community if we had civilian oversight. And so I'm hoping that your commissioners, who were basically asking the questions that we were asking, will work together with you and you will create that entity so that we can have a better and a more safer community. That's what builds trust. That's
great.
All I have
Thank
to
you.
Say.
Thank you very much. So our auditor is here. Are there questions for her or for her team, some of whom are still with us? If not, then do I have a motion on this report?
I move to accept the report. That doesn't mean with the amendments that we discussed under the recommendations, and my assessment of the recommendations is that we are now agreeing to all of the recommendations.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Further discussion? Then let's take a roll call on accepting the report as amended.
Novick?
Appreciate the report, the response, and all the testimony. Aye.
Pritz.
So in fact, we are accepting the report as written. What we're amending is the police bureau's response to it, and I have confidence that Mayor Hales will be overseeing not only that, but also the other suggestions that we've heard from the community today. We're not, this is one piece of the evidence and the fact-finding and the advice that we're receiving. We will shortly be setting up the Community Oversight Advisory Board for the Department of Justice settlement. The application for that will be available online within the next week or so. And so we encourage community members of all races, all communities, to come and work with us in resolving these challenges and inequities that have plagued us for too long. And I do thank also the Police Bureau and those who testified today for their willingness to make those changes that they believe with us are necessary, because we do want our community to trust us and the police. Aye.
Fish.
I want to thank the auditor for bringing this report to council. I want to thank the OIR group for a thoughtful set of recommendations, and I want to thank everyone that stayed with us this afternoon for a very provocative conversation. And we obviously have a lot of work to do, and I appreciate everyone's testimony and time. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank our auditor, Levon Griffin-Vallade, for bringing the OIR group on board a few years back. And I appreciate the good quality work of the OIR group, and I think that they have some good recommendations that have been brought forward today. I think the police bureau has more or less agreed with most of the recommendations, although there are some notable exceptions, and I think this 48-hour rule still needs to be sort of fleshed out, if no other form, in our certainly in our next contract negotiations with the Portland Police Association. It does sound like it's an outlier, notwithstanding Garrity. So I'd like to see that addressed by us head on in our next round of negotiations, and I appreciate these recommendations, and we'll keep moving forward. Aye.
Hales.
Well, I want to appreciate both the good work and the heartfelt concern that I hear in this room. And let me tell you where my heart is as commissioner in charge of the police bureau. This report was an examination of the past, of officer-involved shootings and deaths in custody that occurred in the past. And I'm not being flippant here, but my authority as police commissioner does not extend to the past. But I can learn from it, and that's the point of this report. And that's why we do this in the light of the day, and with people able to comment on it, as citizens have today. We can also change things so that the past doesn't happen again. And I'm about that, and I'm endeavoring to do that, and I want more advice and counsel from citizens that care about these issues about how we do that, including the people that are here today. As I mentioned, with one exception, I've gone to every officer-involved shooting that's occurred in the 2 years that I've been mayor. I'll continue to do that because it's the worst thing that we do. No matter whether it's justified or not, it's the most terrible exercise of the power that our police bureau has. And I take that very, very seriously. And we are making changes in the police bureau that I think are going to have a lasting positive impact. We've started changing things that need to be changed about who we hire and how we train them and what the rules are for when they use force and what the consequences are when they behave improperly. We have fired a lot of police officers in the last couple of years. Not something we're proud of, but those firings have stuck in many cases. There have been firings in the past, which we know have not. So I believe that we are doing some of what needs to be done to make this police bureau as humane as it can possibly be in its relationship with the citizens of Portland. There's more to do, and there are ideas that we haven't thought of yet. So I want to encourage this conversation to continue, and I also want to commend the good work that I see when I see it, and it's very often from the Portland Police Bureau. I get on this phone a daily situation report from the Police Bureau, and there are cases after cases, days after days, nights after nights, where something happens that isn't in the media, and it's because a couple of officers have disarmed a kid with what looked like a real rifle in a way that no one got hurt, or because officers have intervened with someone who has suicidal and gotten them to treatment in a humane way, albeit
in the back of a police car, which isn't the best way for somebody that needs mental health treatment to get to a hospital. But I see those kinds of de-escalations day after day after day, and they will not make the newspaper because they're not spectacular, but they're spectacularly good work, and I appreciate it, and I want to encourage more of it. So I think that we have an opportunity to change. I wouldn't have run for this office if I thought that change was impossible and that culture can never evolve or be shaped in a different way. I do believe it can and that it is. So I'm looking forward to more of these discussions, to more of this kind of careful, incisive, clear-eyed review of what went wrong or what went right in the past. I'll put it to good use, and I hope that all of you as citizens continue giving us good advice and push us to make this police bureau an exception. We've been an exception as a city in a lot of ways, and I think this is one more way that we can do that. So thank you for the good work. Aye. Okay. We have one more item, I believe, in our afternoon council calendar.